Hey, it's you, man, from KC95 here. Good evening and welcome to Toasted Tavern. Your host, Scott Tobin, and the man called Wags are ready to bring you the night in sports. So pull up a stool, grab a drink, and let's get toasted.
And good evening. Welcome into the latest edition of the Toasted Tavern. I am Wags, joined alongside, as always, by my co-host, Scott Tobin. And coming at you today on a day where a flurry of trades went down in the NBA, but the one that hit home was with the Blues and a longtime player here in St. Louis. We'll talk about that in just a few minutes, as well as some college basketball, the NBA, as we said. And we'll talk a little football. I'm not going to give you our picks tonight because we've got an interesting way we're going to reveal those. But we'll talk a little bit about the football game that's coming up on Sunday as well. But Scott, how's your week been? Been a little bit up and down weather-wise, a little dreary today. But we should be getting some good weather here coming up in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, it's going to warm up a little bit towards the end of the weekend. The wind today was the big thing, man. That wind was crazy today. You know, it was spitting a little bit of snow, and I think we're supposed to get maybe a little few snow flurries tomorrow morning, be kind of cold tomorrow and Saturday, and then start to warm up. So, you know, all in all, for Missouri in February, you can't really complain because we haven't had a lot of ice, we haven't had a lot of snow, and really our temperatures, other than a few days here and there, really haven't been that cold either, honestly.
Oh, they really haven't. We've had some 60-degree weather. We've had some very nice days. And I'll be perfectly honest, I'm holding out hope that tomorrow is going to be at least somewhat decent as we get into the latter stages of the day, because I'm going to be calling a lacrosse game tomorrow night. And I'd much rather be a little bit warmer than, you know, snowy and just kind of disgusting. Right now, it looks like it's going to be about a high of 43, but should be clear skies most of the day tomorrow. So let's continue to pray that it stays like that. Nico, yeah, definitely. Part of the show, doesn't he?
Oh yeah, he's running around. Yeah, hopefully it'll be good for you tomorrow. Lacrosse, is that your first attempt to call a lacrosse game?
First attempt to call a lacrosse game. It's women's lacrosse. It's Lindenwood and Cal. So California is going to be here on a beautiful St. Louis day to play some women's lacrosse.
Yeah, you know, that'll be fun, man. I've tried to get into lacrosse a little bit the last couple of years. It's a fun game. You'll have a good time trying to call that.
Big time growing sport. And it's very, very similar to hockey. And you know, we all know we love hockey here in St. Louis. We're big Blues fans. I'm a season ticket holder, as we know. But today was the day that I don't know if people were dreading this day or if it was more of the expected kind of day. But with the way that the team has been trending this year, we knew some of these UFAs were going to be on the block. You've got the Barbashevs, the Acharis, the O'Reillys, and the Tarasenkos. Well, the first shoe essentially dropped today, the first day back in the office for Doug Armstrong after the All-Star break, and he deals Tarasenko to the Rangers, a team that, honestly, I think last year we talked a little bit about that being a good fit for him as well as the Blues having a good fit to have players come back. So Tarasenko goes to the Rangers, and not really the return I think you were expecting, because there were some rumors out there that you were going to get certain players from the Rangers, and not, the ones that came back, not who were you expecting?
No, not at all. I mean, there's a familiar face that's coming back to St. Louis, which is kind of a shock to a lot of people, I think. But like you said, you didn't get the names that maybe you had heard, but all in all, I think they got a pretty good haul out of this, to be totally honest with you. When you can get a first-round pick, and you can get a prospect, and you bring back a former Blue in Sammy Blais. You know, you actually get two picks, as you get the first round this year and the fourth round next year, you know, plus the prospect, plus Blais. So I think that's a pretty good haul, quite honestly, in my opinion anyway.
And for a guy that has shoulder injuries and a shoulder injury history, in a sense, and hasn't really kind of regained his form or his touch in the last couple of years since winning the Stanley Cup, I think that is a good haul that you can get. Sammy Blais is going to come back in and help potentially solidify that bottom six for the rest of this season. Not necessarily saying he's coming back. He's a UFA as well. So it's not like you're, you know, losing anything by bringing him back in for the remainder of the season. You pick up a depth defenseman, somebody that will allow you to bring up guys from the minors. Tyler Tucker actually recalled from Springfield today after the deadline or after the deal was made as well. So that was more so of that depth defense move to allow you to bring up some of those younger guys. Scott Perunovich is on his way back from injury, as well as Marco Scandella. And then, yeah, it's those picks. Those are the two things that, you know, you look at and you go, okay, you know, the protected first round pick, it's going to be the later of the Rangers or Dallas Stars pick. So it's, you know, the Rangers had two first round picks, and it's just going to be the later of the two is what the Blues will get. So really you're sitting here hoping that, you know, maybe both those teams all just decide to tank all of a sudden and you get a chance at getting a decent draft pick. I mean, looking at things right now, I don't think that's really going to be the case, as, you know, the Rangers sit in third place in the Metro, Dallas leading the Central with 70 points. I don't think you're going to see those teams fall off very, very much. And then that fourth round pick in 2024, if the Rangers make the playoffs in 23, the fourth round pick upgrades to a third round pick. So, I mean, you look at it and you go, I think that's a pretty good starting point for the Blues, because they are going to be making some more moves. So you get a point to figure out what a guy like Tarasenko is worth, and then you can start extrapolating out what some of these other players might be worth to other teams.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you know, the big thing right now is you just really want to try to stockpile as many picks or young prospects as you can to try to help speed along the process of the, you don't want to call it a total rebuild, a soft rebuild or a reshuffling or whatever term you want to use as you try to put this team back together. But you need to get as many pieces to help move that along as quickly as possible, whether it is picks that you go ahead and draft yourselves and, you know, kind of bring those guys along in the system, or if it's, you know, capital to use in a trade to acquire players that are already NHL ready that you can pull off something down the road. So, you know, you just need to acquire as much as you can in the next few weeks with these free agents and see what you can do. And, you know, we'll see where we are a month from now, a little over a month from now.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that you can't bring some of these guys you trade away back as well. Right. Since they are going to be unrestricted free agents, they're able to come back. But looking at, you know, this team in the future, right now you've got four forwards signed through the 25-26 season. That's Braden Schenn, Brandon Saad, Jordan Kyrou, and Robert Thomas. Your UFAs right now include Barbashev, the just-acquired Sammy Blais, Noel Achary, Josh Levo, and Tyler Pitlick. Restricted free agents are Logan Brown and Alexei Toropchenko. I think out of that group, the one guy that you're definitely going to be re-signing is Toropchenko. I think he's done a lot this year to prove that he deserves to get a contract. Him and Brown are also arbitration eligible as well. So you may still see Logan Brown coming back, although I don't think that's something you really need to do because he hasn't done anything since he's been a part of this team. And then, you know, dropping down to the defense, that's where things sit just really, really weird. And they have so many defensemen locked up right now, at least for the next 2 years. I mean, you've got Falk, Krug, and Parayko locked up through 26-27. You've got Leddy locked up through 25-26. You've got Bortuzzo and Rosen through next year. And then, as we said, a couple of guys coming back from injury. You know, Marco Scandella is signed through next season as well. But Scott Perunovic is a restricted free agent. He's a guy that, you know, is almost a mirror image of Torrey Krug. So if you look at trying to trade one of those two guys in either Krug or you know, Perunovic to bolster up some of that as well. We talked a little bit before the show about it's going to be very difficult to move some of these defensemen, especially considering some of the contracts they had. Colton Parayko's probably not going anywhere. Justin Falk's probably not going anywhere. And you can't really move a guy like Krug or Leddy right now with the amount of money on those contracts.
No, you wouldn't think so. You would think it would be awfully hard to move any of those guys. And Perunovic, I can't imagine, has any kind of trade value at all because he hasn't proven that he can do anything in the league. And even more alarming than that is he's proven that he can't stay healthy. I mean, you know, the guy keeps being set up to have opportunities and he keeps having major injuries and really hasn't shown anything in the NHL to this point. I mean, I know he was the Hobie Baker Award winner and, you know, everybody had such high hopes for him. But to this point, he's been pretty much a bust. So I can't imagine that he has any kind of trade value in the league right now either. You know, you just, you know, you're running down that list and you're like, we've got so many defensemen signed for all these years. And you go, not one of those guys am I excited about.
No. And they're all, I mean, outside of Parayko, who's 29, they're all over 30 as well. So, you know, they're going to be in their mid 30s by the time these contracts expire. So you're going to have aging defensemen making up, you know, 3/4 of your defensive pairings and being paid very, very high amounts of money. Now, that's just another reason why acquiring that first round pick from the Rangers is important because, you know, we've seen Army do it before. You know, the last time that he had two first round picks was the year he acquired Braden Schenn by trading one of those first round picks. maybe he's got some more magic left in him that he can pair a first round pick with one of those defensemen and maybe something else to acquire something big as far as a forward is concerned. I mean, obviously that's very forward thinking. That's probably not a deadline type of deal. You're talking maybe along the lines of a draft day deal when you know where these picks sit. But he's had magic before. He might be able to do it again. And as we said earlier, you've still got a handful of players that you're able to probably deal, which means you can collect even more potential draft picks or trade capital before the deadline even hits.
No, absolutely. You know, I mean, there's a lot of different ways they can go with this. But like you said, probably the only way you're going to be able to move any of those guys is if you do, you know, attach either a high-valued prospect or one of those draft picks to move them. And then have you really done anything to improve your team if you're just turning around and it's a constant churn? Hey, we're bringing in draft picks. Hey, we're bringing in prospects. But then to get rid of these guys that aren't any good, we have to move those guys right back out again. So, you know, you're just in a constant state of flux. You know, I was thinking about this today, and I was going to talk to you about it. I'm like, you know, we talk about, it seems like this team is in this same position over and over and over, year in, year out, year in, year out. We're talking about the same thing, same problems. The defense isn't good, or the goalie isn't good, or nobody seems to be on the same page. You know, when you really think about it, 2019, there was a three-month period there. Right after the trade deadline, through the playoffs, 4 months, I guess, where that team came together and played well. Other than that, that was the outlier, because other than that, before the trade deadline in 2019, we were talking about these exact same things. You know, we thought this team was trash, basically. They were going to tear it down. You know, I mean, somehow they just hit a spark for those 4 months. But other than that, we've been talking about the exact same thing with this team for like the last 15 years.
Oh, yeah, it's no question. I mean, it seems to be a cultural thing where they just can't seem to put it all together. Now, don't get me wrong. There have been seasons or pockets of time where they've been one of the best teams that you've ever seen out on the ice. I mean, even, you know, in the stretch of 2017 to now, there have been a handful of times where you go, man, this team could beat anybody. They are one of the best teams out there. They're playing the game the right way. They're playing a game that will win against anybody, but it's never been something that's super consistent. Now, don't get me wrong. You can't have perfection every single day of every single season, but when you have the same sort of problems pop up in the same sort of time stretches, that's where you have to kind of sit back and go, what is it really? Because we talked on the last show or the show before about how it seems like every 4 to 5 years, at least since Joel Quenneville has left, since Quenneville was let go, it seems like every 4 to 5 years, regardless of the talent level of the team, regardless of the money being spent, any of that stuff, there's always coaching turnover. It's not necessarily always on the coach. You know, the players end up quitting on the coach, or the mindset changes, or they just get worn down, or what have you. And then a coach gets canned. They bring in another guy. They get hot for a year and a half. And then you're right back in the same boat. And before you know it, you're doing this whole thing all over again. And not saying that Craig Berube's going to get fired after this season, but again, if this team goes into some sort of, you know, massive rebuild, and he doesn't get a very long leash, you could see him gone in the first month or so of the season next year.
It's possible, and who would have thought that when he signed that contract extension last year? Yeah, it's just weird. You know, and it actually goes back to before Quenneville. You could actually call it the curse of Mike Keenan.
Oh, that's no.
That's kind of where it started, when Keenan started tearing that team apart. You know, because, you know, that team should have won. I mean, if he keeps that team together, that team should have won a couple of Stanley Cups. You know, Gretzky should have stayed. You know, you could have kept Curtis Joseph. I mean, there are so many things that you look at those few years, and that's kind of where it all started. You know, you could have had a dynasty there. He tore it apart, and then it's just been in a constant state of rebuild ever since.
Well, I mean, Joel Quenneville held it together for a long time. I mean, you saw a lot of sustained success.
But
you saw a lot of sustained success.
He did, although there were a lot of years under Quenneville where we saw the same things happen, where they just kind of fell apart at key moments. And you know, it was sustained success in one way, but there was never like a complete season. You know, I mean, they would, even the years that they had really, really good regular seasons, they got to the playoffs and then they just fell flat. You know, so, I mean, there's never been that, like, full season where this team has just been from start to finish. You go, wow, I really feel good about this team, because there's always something. Something always happens. There's always some kind of drama. And it's just odd, like you said, with all the changing parts, coaches, GMs, ownership, that you have the same thing just keep coming up. It's just a really odd situation.
Yeah, they probably built, you know, Enterprise Center on some former Indian burial ground, and it's all just coming to a head every 4 or 5 years. It's cyclical. Every 4 or 5 years, they rise up and tear this team down.
Could be. You never know.
So we kind of got away from, you know, the main piece of what we were talking about, which is Vladimir Tarasenko being moved to the Rangers. And you look at it and you go, man, this guy has been with this team since 2010. He was the 16th overall pick that year. You good?
Yeah.
Okay. He's one of the top scorers on this Blues team. 262 goals, 291 assists in his 11 years with St. Louis. Fifth all-time in goals scored and in points. He's tied for sixth with Alex Steen for assists all-time with the Blues. A guy that dealt with injuries over the course of the last few years, and really somebody compared him to, oh my gosh, I completely lost who they compared him to, but somebody that was very potentially successful here in St. Louis, but dealt with a lot of injuries and could, oh, Scott Rolland. They likened him to Scott Rolland in a sense, where stellar career, could be a Hall of Famer, but his career was derailed by injuries, only got the one championship. And you look at it and you go, yeah, he was good here, but was he really great?
Yeah, I can see that comparison. I can see that comparison. Definitely very good players, just the injuries taking a toll on their career. So I can definitely see where that came from. You know, in Roland's case, I think he was great. You know, and you know, it's just something, it's kind of in the eye of the beholder, because both have really good careers. Just the injury bug kind of biting them has put a little bit of a damper on that.
And I came up with one question when I was kind of going through all of this, because, you know, Tarasenko was here through a couple of captain changes, a couple of ownership changes, some coaching changes as well, and really a little bit of league changing as well. You know, we saw a lot of players that, you know, kind of became faces of teams, become faces of the league in a sense. And it always seemed like he was always pushing to be one of those guys, one of the faces of the NHL or a face of the St. Louis Blues. But I kind of look at it and I go, was he ever truly the face of the franchise? Yes, he was here for 11 seasons. He put up a lot of great memories. But when you look at it as a whole, was he ever really a face of this franchise? Because you had David Backes, you had Alex Petrangelo, you had Alex Steen. I mean, there are a bunch of guys that could have fit that mold. Was Tarasenko ever one of those?
Yeah, I think he was for a couple years stretch there. You know, I mean, we got to remember too, I mean, he was on the cover of the NHL video mm-hmm. game. What 17? He was on the cover of that
game? I think so, yeah.
You know, I mean, he was one of the faces of the league there for a while. And while they had, like you said, you had the Steens and you had the Backeses, he was that guy that was the electric scorer that, you know, every time that he had the puck on his stick, you felt like he was going to score or do something for that 3 or 4 year stretch where he was healthy. And so, yeah, I think he was the face of the franchise. I think nationally, people, when they thought of the Blues, that's who they thought of, because he was the guy who was on the highlight reels. You know, he was the guy when the Blues made ESPN, you know, it was because he scored some amazing goal or did something exciting or had a hat trick or something like that. So, yeah, I think there was a short period of a couple of years there where he really was the face of this team and one of the faces in the NHL.
And he was also one of the only guys that could score on this team for a decent stretch as well.
He was, so. Absolutely.
But, you know, yes, they got Sammy Blais back, but he was one of the last players from that 2010 team that is an unrestricted free agent. You know, O'Reilly's kind of the last unrestricted free – well, no, Barbashev too. Barbashev and O'Reilly, kind of the last two guys, unrestricted free agents that were part of that 2019 team. You know, obviously Binnington's still here as well. We talk a little bit about rebuild. We talk about retooling. You look at this and you go, is this a turning point for this franchise, or is it just kind of more of the same and we're just going to continue to see? Because there's nothing wrong with something like this continuing, because they are successful. They continue to make the playoffs. They continue to, you know, provide entertainment for fans. So there's nothing wrong with like not having a turn in the franchise, but is this one of those moments where, you know, like when David Backus left or when Alex Petrangelo left? I mean, is this one of those moments?
I mean, to a certain extent, I mean, it's definitely a changing of the guard moment. You know, it's definitely kind of changing from the team that won the cup to a new chapter in the Blues, officially kind of turning the page on that team that won the cup and going, okay, now we're moving into this new chapter of Blues hockey. And I think that's going to be really interesting to see what happens, you know, the next few months as we go into the trade deadline, of course, the next few weeks, and then the offseason, and see what direction this team really heads as we head into next year. Is it just kind of a soft reboot, or are we really going to tear this thing down in the next few months and see a total rebuild and try to come back, you know, just try to say, okay, we've got to tear this thing down, fix our defense, do everything we can, and, you know, just accept the fact we're not going to be very good for 2 or 3 years, and then try to bounce back and have another championship window at the end of that 2 or 3 years as you kind of really try to rebuild everything.
Well, we talked last week about this, you know, if this team does go into like a full rebuild, do you try and move Jordan Binnington and, you know, elevate Joel Hofer into that role of starting goaltender? You know, we looked at it and we kind of said, yeah, maybe that's something you do, give him an opportunity to go win in another, you know, franchise. But I've kind of been stewing over it the last couple of days, really, and thinking about it and going, I don't know if I would actually do that now, because you've got a guy in Joel Hofer who has very, very limited NHL experience. And what's the one thing about this team that we continuously talk about? Just how poor the defense is. And do you really want to bring up a guy and say, hey, look, we're going to give you the same defense Jordan Binnington has, and, you know, he did pretty good keeping us in games. Well, hey, Brooke, now you got to do the same thing. If you're wanting to build a guy's confidence up, if you're wanting to build up a guy to be a star NHL goaltender, I don't know if you really want to do that. So, I mean, I'm not necessarily going to sit there and say I've flipped my position, because I still think if this team does go through a full rebuild, Jordan Binnington might net you some pretty good things. But if it's more of a soft one, no, I'm not putting Joel Hofer through that, because it took us how long to find a goaltender that is somewhat consistent? Could you imagine if you have a young goaltender that has some potential and you break him? I mean, it's the Blues' MO, is you break good young goaltenders.
Yeah, I can see your argument. I still think I would do it. I would do it. If I'm going to tear it down, I'm going to go ahead and move Binnington. And then I go out and get another veteran, you know, a Thomas Greiss type guy that's going to cost you pretty much nothing, that you can put out there and kind of be that leader, you know, that can kind of help the rookie through things, kind of talk him through things, kind of be that coach to him as much as anything else as he tries to fight his way through there. And then you just tell him, hey, you know, you're going to take your lumps. You know, our defense isn't very good. We're rebuilding. But you have that veteran guy there to try to work him through it and try to help him deal with it. And you just build, because, you know, as we've talked about so often, you know, young teams have to know how to lose before they can know how to win. And so maybe if you have that veteran guy that's there that can help you walk through it, you get him through those really rough years when you are good. He's gone through the bad times, and he's battle-tested that way. You know, he's prepared to help you win, you know, because he knows what it feels like to have those rough times going into it.
Well, I would sit there and say I just thought of a goaltender that, you know, if you could bring him back in to mentor him, but – he's under contract the next 2 years, so you definitely have to make a trade. It'd be crazy if they brought Jake Allen back.
Oh, Jake Allen. How many Blues fans would be upset if Jake Allen came back? I know a couple. If you moved Binnington and bring Jake back, that would be interesting to see how Blues fans would react.
I mean, at that point, you just do need some sort of content, something to get the fans riled up and, you know, passionate about the team. So why not, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, fans are going to be riled up no matter what you do at this point. You know, they're not going to be happy if you don't go all out and try to rebuild. They're not going to be happy if you lose. They're not going to be happy. You know, they're not going to be happy for the next little while, no matter what this team does, I don't think.
No, because they're going to get like the 8th or 9th overall pick in the draft, so they're not getting Connor Bedard. The Rangers and Stars will meet in the Stanley Cup Finals, which means that first-round pick is going to be one of the last two of the round. Everything that's going to go against the Blues will probably go against the Blues, and fans will be like, yep, that's exactly how it's supposed to work. And because we're the franchise that we are, that's just how it's going to fall.
Yep, and then we'll hear the Doug Armstrong-Mo comparisons, and everybody will be wanting to run Doug Armstrong out of town, and he doesn't know what he's doing, and he only won one championship, and blah, 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 blah. And yeah, the love for Doug Armstrong may be slowly starting to fade with a lot of Blues fans.
I think it is for sure. I definitely do believe that's the case, and that's sort of the same thing we saw it as in the end of his tenure in Dallas as well. You get some success, you win a championship all of a sudden, and I'll be perfectly honest, this is not just a Doug Armstrong specific thing. This is every championship quality team goes through this, where you're successful, you win some championships, and all of a sudden those contracts get bloated, and then your team is full of high salaried older guys, and you have to reset. Chicago's going through it right now, in a sense. I mean, not saying that Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews are going to be traded at the deadline this year, but you know, if they are, all of a sudden that team is nowhere near what it was when they went on their Stanley Cup runs. And every team, I think the only team that really has been able, well, two teams really, that have been able to kind of sustain it are Tampa Bay and, in a sense, Pittsburgh. And you look at Pittsburgh and they don't have a ton of big names. Yes, they do have big names, but they also have a lot of good supplementary players that fill the roles that they need to fill. And that's why Pittsburgh, for some reason, just continuously stays successful and in that kind of championship window for an extended period of time.
Yeah, that's an organization that just knows how to do things the right way and just keep kind of, you know, filling in with role players, doing whatever they have to do to keep that team successful year in, year out. And isn't it funny, a city like Pittsburgh, the Steelers are really good at that year in, year out. They win, they win, they win. They're always right there. The Penguins, year in, year out, they're always right there. And then you have the Pirates, and that ownership group and that organization just can't figure it out.
No, they really can't. And they've got a beautiful ballpark, and they've got some very, very good and passionate fans. And yet they just, for some reason, cannot put it together. And, you know, I think you go back to the 90s and maybe they're cursed. I don't know. Maybe something's happened to where those Pirates are cursed.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Like, you know, they were so good in the 60s and the 70s. You know, the 80s were not good. They had that early run in the 90s with Bonds and Bonilla and Van Slyke. And then they were horrible, you know, until the, 2011, 2012 when McCutcheon and Polanco and those guys got there. Marte, you know, they had their three-year run. And then, but then again, the ownership turned around and took all of those guys and traded them. You know, you had Garrett Cole, you had Jameson Taillon, you had all of these young pitchers, and they traded them. And, they're in a constant state of rebuild, unfortunately, because like you said, that's a passionate fan base in Pittsburgh and a neat ballpark. And it's fun when that place is packed in Pittsburgh, because they do know how to support that team when they have a good product.
Well, I was in Cincinnati late last year, and you could just tell what playing in an empty ballpark feels like. And I don't envy Pirates players, Reds players, Royals players to an extent, although when we were there a couple years ago, even when they weren't all that great, they still had a pretty good fan base that packed it in there. But yeah, to not play in front, and that's not just baseball, it's everything, hockey, every basketball.
Sport. Oh yeah.
If there's very few fans in the stands, it's a really weird experience.
Yeah. You know, you don't have that fan base, that passion, that momentum to build off of as a player. It's like you're playing in an empty building, and that's hard to get up for that when you, one day you're playing at 40,000 and on the road, and then you go home and, you know, you got 4,000 people there. It's a hard thing for players to get used to and to get really into a groove when they're playing like that.
And that's why we saw the weird, weird sports world of 2020, 2021 when the pandemic hit. All right, let's jump over and talk a little bit about the NBA, something we don't talk a whole lot about, but holy moly, did everybody seemed to go crazy here in the last 48 hours as that trade deadline came and went today. So many moves and so many big names moving as well. I mean, it started off with Kyrie Irving going to the Mavericks, but then Kevin Durant goes to the Suns. The Lakers decide to just move everybody in and out. The Clippers, Rockets, Grizzlies. I mean, almost every single team in the West made some sort of move. But when you look at it, you go, okay, who actually made the right move in order to put themselves in position to win a championship?
I mean, I think the winner of this trade deadline is pretty obvious. It's the Phoenix Suns. Because you now have a big four in Phoenix that's as good as any team in the league. You know, Kevin Durant joining that group. They should be the odds-on favorite to win the West and win the NBA right now. And, you know, it'll be a pretty big disappointment if they don't make a deep run in the playoffs. You know, it was weird. The West went crazy, and the East was kind of silent. There really wasn't a whole lot going on in the East, a couple of moves here and there. But, yeah, it's going to be really interesting. That Western Conference is going to be fun to watch in the playoffs because pretty much every big-name player in the league is now in the West for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the Nuggets still sitting up at the top of the West. They made a move sending out, you know, Bones Highland, who was scoring 12.1 points per game for them. And, you know, they did pick up Thomas Bryant from the Lakers, a backup center who was averaging about the same amount of points. So I don't know if it's a really true one-for-one kind of swap. But I was interested to see that the Nuggets didn't really do much. They almost decided to kind of stand pat in a sense when they saw all these other big guys kind of being moved into the conference. Do you think the Nuggets are confident that their team offensively and defensively can match up against every single one of these teams and with who they brought in?
It's going to be interesting to see what the Nuggets do in the next couple of days, because there's a guy in Utah that got traded to Utah who is probably going to come to a buyout settlement in Russell Westbrook. And early this afternoon, there were a lot of rumors that Chicago was interested, that he was going to go to the Bulls. As we've gotten later into the day, there's been a whole lot of clamoring going on that he's going to Denver. So, you know, if you add Russell Westbrook to that Nuggets team, then that really changes their offensive outlook. You know, and then they're right there. As you know, like you said, they're the number one seed right now, but that just makes them that much more dangerous when you put Russ on a really good team.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at their starters, you know, Jamal Murray, who's out right now, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Michael Porter Jr., Nikolai Jokic. I mean, they've got a very solid group. Jeff Green, he's a backup forward there. They've got a good team, but it's a team of, I'm not going to sit there and say no names because, you know, Jokic is phenomenal. He's a great player. Michael Porter Jr. as well. I mean, they've got a good team, but when you're looking at what all these other teams did to bring in name guys, it strikes me as just, again, odd that they didn't really do a whole lot unless they were banking on the fact that Westbrook would get himself out of whatever team he would get traded to and give them the option to bring him in.
Yeah, and, you know, they've had kind of that core team together now for a few years, so you may not want to mess with that. They may just kind of wanted to keep things pretty much intact and see what they could do. You know, and we talk about big names. Kyrie Irving's a name, but what has Kyrie Irving done on a basketball court in the last 2.5 years that anybody should be excited about?
Nothing I can think of.
You know, that's like I was strolling through Facebook today and somebody had a picture of the Suns and the Mavs and they said, oh, can't wait for this playoff matchup. You know, Kyrie's going to light up Durant. And my comment was, Kyrie will find a reason to be, you know, away from the team and screw another team over by the time we get to the playoffs. That matchup will never happen.
I mean, it's very, very possible. I mean, you and I were talking about when the deal went down that, you know, is his, you know, mindset going to fly down in Texas? I mean, you thought up in, you know, New Jersey, he was getting some trouble. Have that mindset down in Texas and see what happens there. And with, you know, what's his name? Yeah, Luka. I mean, how are they going to play together?
Yeah, I just don't see that being a match made in heaven. You know, because Luka likes to play the point. You know, he kind of runs that offense. I don't know how he and Kyrie kind of mix and match in that situation. And, you know, Kyrie is not exactly the guy who loves to share the ball a whole lot as a guard either. He's another me guy, although Luka kind of is to a certain extent as well. So it'll be really interesting to see how those egos mesh as we move forward, but I wouldn't expect a whole lot from Dallas, to be totally honest with you. I think it's going to be kind of like the train wreck we saw in Cleveland and we saw in Boston and we saw in Brooklyn and we saw, you know, it's just kind of followed Kyrie everywhere he goes. So we will see what happens.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting last couple of months to see how this kind of plays out. You know, one team that you look at and you go, maybe they should have done something a little bit more because they've been struggling as of late. And that's, you know, our team in the Memphis Grizzlies, 2-8 in their last 10 games. Somebody made the comment on one of the fan pages that, you know, they're like, this team has gone downhill ever since Ja said, I'm fine in the West.
Yeah. You know, you had that happen, and then you had the whole Shannon Sharp thing happen, and they just have not been able to play good basketball since then. You know, that's a talented team. I think they'll figure it out at some point, but they've got to get it going here pretty quickly.
Yeah, they certainly do. And you know, you also see the Warriors sitting down there in ninth with a one game over 500 record. You said it after these moves went down. You go, yeah, watch, all these moves are going to get made, and Golden State's still going to win the championship.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if they get in the playoffs, you can't look past them. I don't care what seed they are. When you've got those that big three still in the championship pedigree, they know how to win. You know, they get in the postseason, even if they're an eight seed. You know, they're going to be scary because they can get on a run and beat anybody. We know that. You know, they just can. So that's a team you've always got to watch out for. You know, pretty much anybody in the West that gets in the playoffs is going to have a chance. I mean, it's just really that deep. Although, like we said a little while ago, with what the Suns did with Durant, you know, it's almost like when he went to Golden State, you already had the big three. Now he's kind of made it the big four there in Phoenix. So, you know, it's a good place to go. You have to ask yourself now, though, who's the bigger ring chaser? Is it LeBron or is it KD? Because neither one of them can obviously do it on their own.
Well, considering Durant has made somewhat good choices in where he's gone, I think they're neck and neck in a sense. I haven't followed it too closely, though. Did Durant demand a trade out of New Jersey, or were the Nets just going, look, we're going to have to start recouping some stuff? Because if he didn't demand a trade out of New Jersey – or Brooklyn, or wherever they're playing at nowadays, I still would have to lean it towards LeBron in a sense. But, you know, if he demanded to get out of there, I definitely say Durant's right there.
I don't think he publicly demanded. I think he made it well known that he wasn't happy, you know, and I think the ownership just said, okay, this didn't work like we thought it was going to, which I remember when all that happened, I said, okay, this is a train wreck that's going to fall apart almost as fast as it came together. Yeah, I he didn't publicly say, hey, I want out, but I think he let it be known that he would be more than happy to get out of Brooklyn. And, it's weird. You would have thought KD or LeBron, as good as they're supposed to be, could win a championship without having to have three or four stars around him. But obviously that is not the case. And so we'll just have to see. Which brings me to a post I saw today, which was the dumbest thing I've ever seen. There was actually a post today that said, since LeBron broke Kareem's scoring title, is LeBron the greatest Laker of all time? I was like, he's not even in the top 10 of greatest Lakers of all time.
No. I mean, you could sit there and make an argument if you're going strictly on numbers and not where those numbers were collected. Because, yeah, you could sit there and say he's the greatest Laker of all time because he has the most points scored in the history of the game, and he's done a whole lot of things that put him up at the top of the league. But a majority of that stuff wasn't done in a Lakers uniform. When I sit there and think of best of a team, I think of a guy that was at his best and set records on that team versus the records that were set while he was with a team. Like Albert, you know, he not one of the greatest Dodgers of all time. Even though he hit, you know, multiple career trajectory home runs in that time frame with the Dodgers and with the Angels, I don't think he's one of the greatest Angels of all time as well. But he's definitely one of the greatest Cardinals of all time because of what he did here. I think LeBron's probably the best Cavalier player in Cleveland history, or one of the top Cavs players. I think he could arguably be one of the better Miami Heat players in their history. Maybe not the best, but one of the best. But I think you're right. I don't think he's anywhere in the top 10 of best Lakers based on what he's done in a Lakers uniform.
No, I mean, just think about it. You're talking about, is he better than Jerry West? Is he better than Bill Walton? Is he better than Kareem? Is he better than Magic? Is he better than Worthy? Was he better than AC Green? Was he better than Kobe? Was he, I mean, you can just, Shaq. I just named Shaq. I just named 10 people right there, and he's not better. As a Laker, he's not better than any of those guys.
No, not at all. But like I said, if you're talking about all encompassing, if you're just looking at the numbers and saying, okay, he's the best scorer in NBA history. He's done this and this and this and this. Yes, he is the best Laker in that sense because he leads all these categories. I get that. But you could also say he's the best Bull because he's better than any of the Bulls players because he's the leading scorer.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing he actually has done as a Laker is won a championship in a COVID year in a bubble when he wouldn't even stay in the – he had to stay in his own resort little hotel and wouldn't even stay with the team.
I mean, that's all you need to know. That's all you need to know right there. I mean, once again, for those of you that have listened to the show for a long time, I'm not a LeBron person hater. I am a LeBron basketball hater. There are things that he does in his personal life that are something that should be celebrated and say, yeah, that's great. You're doing what you're supposed to do with the platform that you have and the money that you have. I love those kinds of things. But strictly as a professional athlete and a basketball player, not a fan.
No, not at all. Not at all. Just his whole demeanor on the court drives me crazy. And the flopping and the whining. And, you know, all you had to do was watch the ridiculous show he put on after that foul in the Celtics game. And I don't know how anybody could like him watching that. It's like, dude, you want to call yourself the greatest player ever and then that you're a role model and all these things, and you're going to let kids see you act like that. You know, you acted, I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous, and he does it all the time, and he's done it his whole career. But I could go on forever about how much I dislike the guy, but we'll end it here quickly.
Yeah. And you may not have to talk about him in the playoffs either, because right now the Lakers sit two games out of that 10th spot. So, you know, it's possible that you may not have to talk about LeBron in the playoffs this year, which in my mind would be a very, very, very good thing. All right, let's keep it on the subject of basketball. Let's flip over to the college game, though. We got to look at teams as they get near and near these conference tournaments and the NCAA tournament. Locally here, Mizzou, Illinois, and SLU. All teams that are kind of middling at the moment, in a sense. I mean, Mizzou is a little bit more solid, in a sense. They have two losses in their last five games, and that one against Mississippi State was one that most people would rather just forget even happened. But able to bounce back against South Carolina, four players in double figures, but they got a big one on Saturday, a massive one at Tennessee. And right now this Mizzou team is projected as an 8 seed in the latest bracketology, and they're kind of a bit on the decline in that aspect as well. You know, can this team go in there into Tennessee and beat a Volunteers team that's as good as it is this year? Or is it one of those moments where you go, okay, you guys got to keep it close and make yourself, you know, look good against a top team?
I mean, it's going to be tough. You know, Tennessee lost their last game, which is going to make them even more fired up to come into this one. You know, Mizzou's not played particularly well on the road, which, you know, it's tough to play on the road in the SEC. We've seen that, you know, all teams struggle on the road in the SEC. You know, the conference is just tough. You know, can they win? Absolutely. If they shoot like they're capable, they can beat anybody any night. We've talked about that all year. But is it going to be an easy thing? And do I expect them to win at Tennessee? No, I don't. I expect Tennessee to win this one. But, you know, I think Mizzou could keep it close. And if they have a hot night, you just never know. This is going to be a big stretch because then they have Auburn and Texas A&M after that. So that's three big games. They need to win. You got to win at least one of the three. It'd be nice if you could take two. I mean, it's not going to be easy, but, you know, if you could do that, then you really, you know, if you could take two out of those three, I think you would probably move up. I think you'd probably see them being looked at as more like a 5 or a 6 seed. If they win one of the three and they stay close, then I think they're probably, you know, somewhere between an 8 and a 10 seed right now. You know, and we've still got a long way to go with the rest of the regular season and then the SEC tournament to see where that plays out. But I think they've got a strong foothold as far as getting in the tournament.
Yeah, I think so as well. I mean, they've got a very good resume. They've got a bunch of top 25 wins this year. I mean, they've beaten Illinois and Kentucky. Both teams are ranked. Arkansas was ranked. Ohio State was ranked, or Iowa State was ranked as well. And you know, who knows? Maybe you get a team like, you know, maybe an Auburn gets in as a ranked team by the time they play on you know, on Valentine's Day, or maybe even a Texas A&M team gets ranked by the time they play them late next week as well. So if you have the ability to knock off another ranked team before the end of this season, that gives you another, you know, notch in the belt when it comes to Selection Sunday. And then you've got an SEC tournament that, you know, you look at it and you go, okay, you know, Mizzou middle of the pack right now, but any team can beat any team on any given night. And outside of Alabama, you look at that SEC and you go, yeah, I mean, everybody kind of matches up in one way or another against each other, and you could go on a bit of a deep run in this tournament.
Well, and we got to remember, too, that Alabama game, Mizzou went into that game without Kobe Brown, too. Yep. So that, you know, you have a healthy Kobe Brown, that could be a totally different ball game as well. So, yeah, I think you can, they can beat anybody on any given night. You know, they just have to shoot well. You know, the three-point shot is definitely the key to their game. And, you know, we know they don't play great defense, so they've got to be able to shoot well from the free throw line as well, which they normally do. And if they can do those two things, then they can be hell for anybody that they play.
That they can. Now, the Fighting Illini have kind of been up and down a little bit as well the last couple of weeks. They dropped a game against Illinois, or against Iowa, just the other night. They now sit fifth in the Big Ten, which you look at it and you go, okay, fifth in the Big Ten, that's kind of, but they're really only a half game behind second place in a sense, as you see Indiana, Rutgers, and Michigan all sitting at 8-5, with Northwestern, Illinois, and Iowa at 7-5, Maryland and Michigan State at 7-6. I mean, it is a very, very bunched Big Ten, and they've got a huge game coming up on Saturday against Rutgers. The game against Minnesota actually postponed due to COVID issues. Game will be remade, made up again on February 20th. But you've got that game against Rutgers on Saturday, and then a week later, you've got a game against Indiana as well. That one will be in Indiana. So two very big games coming up for Illinois that could help them get a little bit closer to the top part of that Big Ten conference, and really maybe make that game against Purdue at the end of the season very, very important.
It could be. It could be. Like you said, another really tough conference this year. You know, anybody in that Big Ten could win it. Illinois is a good basketball team. They have the same thing as Mizzou. They just have their on and off nights, but they can fight anybody in the country, and they could definitely make a run at Purdue, you know, when they meet up. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. You know, they also have a pretty good foothold as far as getting in the tournament. I think the last bracketology update I saw had them as like a 6 seed.
Yep.
So, you know, they're in pretty good shape. So you feel good about getting those two teams in. And then the third team is SLU, and, you know, they've played a weird season. You know, they've been kind of up and down, although they're right there in the A-10 conference at the top. You know, they're right behind VCU for that top spot. And, you know, when the bracketology came out the other day, they had VCU and as a 12 seed, yep, as an at-large. So, you know, there is a possibility that if a team like SLU would get into that tournament and make a run, you know, play well the next few games of the regular season, and then you make a run in the tournament and say you get to the championship game and lose to VCU, potentially you do get in as like a 12 seed, you know, as an at-large. You know, that's the one chance there is, I think, of there being two teams out of the A-10 getting into the tournament, is if a team like SLU would lose in the championship game to VCU.
Well, and they've got a chance to make some hay the last couple weeks, because they got a game tomorrow night against Dayton, who sits just a half game behind them in the A-10. And then they still get to go to VCU and then host Dayton again. So an opportunity with three games against, you know, the 1-3 seeds essentially in this conference, you still got a chance of winning the regular season conference overall, giving yourself a nice, you know, one seed going into the A-10 tournament, which I believe last time I saw it, the A-10 is a double bye conference tournament, isn't it?
It is.
So,
it
is. You know, you get that, and all of a sudden you're almost setting yourself up to get into the finals. So they've got that. So that game against Dayton's tomorrow night. Then, you know, Davidson, Duquesne, Richmond, and Loyola, Chicago, four games in between, you know, the Dayton and then the double dip against VCU and Dayton again. And you look at it and you go, okay, Duquesne 6-5. You know, Davidson 4-7, Richmond 5-7, Loyola Chicago 2-9. Those are all four games you have to win. Like, you have to win. You cannot give yourself any margin of error whatsoever when it comes to, you know, the three games that you're going to be playing that could determine your seeding. So you look at it and you go, okay, they've got a chance. They've got a real chance of winning the A-10 regular season and going on a deep, deep run in the A-10 tournament and possibly winning that one and just making it all for naught and get the automatic qualifier.
Right. And, you know, and they're another team, you know, that when they play their game, when they play well, they can hang with anybody. You know, we've seen it. You know, they almost beat Auburn early in the year. Should have beat Auburn early in the year. You know, they can play with the best teams in the country when they're playing their game. They just have to – they have to hit their free throws, which has been the Achilles heel for them for the last two or three years. You know, and we've seen it. They've just played a weird season this year.
Yep.
You know, a lot of the games that they've lost, they had big leads late in the game, and they just fell apart in the last 3 or 4 minutes of the game. So, you know, they've got to be able to play a full 40 minutes. And, you know, if they do that and play their game, they can be right there with anybody, and they could make a run. You know, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility. I mean, you can see one possibility where they don't make the tournament, and you can see another possibility where they're a Sweet 16 team. I mean, that's kind of the way that things could swing either way for this team.
Well, and when you've got Yuri Collins, who is kind of dishing the ball all over the place, it makes things a lot easier. You know, he became the A-10, not just the SLU, but the A-10 all-time assist leader just the other night. So a big congratulations to him. And, you know, I talked about this a couple years ago when we were with somebody else. And, you know, they were big into Yuri Collins, and, you know, it was really at the beginning of his career. And it's like, okay, look, I appreciate, you know, you being excited about somebody, but I got to see something before I can go, okay, yeah, he's done it. Yuri Collins has definitely shown that he is that guy, and he can do it consistently year in and year out. So I think he is destined for some big things here in the next couple of years.
I agree. You know, I got the chance to watch him too a little bit at St. Mary's. Got to call a couple of those games his junior and senior year. Saw him play 3 or 4 times, and you can definitely see the potential there. And he's definitely capitalized and just improved and improved and improved. And, you know, he's definitely got the possibility, got the talent to be an NBA point guard. You know, so I think his future is really bright. I think we'll see him play on the next level.
All right. I got to ask you this one. This is a question that I don't think like gets asked a whole lot, because I think everybody has a different style of play they like to watch, but we're getting close to conference tournament time, and there's always a lot of really, really good games in these tournaments. But what's the one conference that you're looking at and going, okay, if I were forced to watch every single game of this conference tournament, which one would intrigue you the most and give you the most potential to see multiple good games?
It's going to come down to what type of basketball you really like. If you like high scoring games with, you know, questionable defense, but, you know, you're going to see, you know, 90 to 83 games, you know, 78, 76 games, you're going to watch the SEC. If you like 90s style basketball where teams are going to go in there and they're going to bang and they're going to be physical and they're going to play defense, you're going to watch the Big Ten. It just comes down to which style of basketball you prefer. But, you know, whatever kind of ball you like, you're going to be able to see some really good games. You just have to pick your conference pretty much.
Oh, good dodge of the question there.
Hey, there's plenty of style for whatever you like, man. You just have to pick and choose your games.
There is. And, you know, I was looking through a majority of the conferences before we came on the air, and it was like, okay, there's got to be some conferences that, you know, you can tell clearly who's going to be the winner and who's not. I had a difficult time. A lot of these conferences are so tightly packed, and everybody is all within a couple of games of each other that I don't even know if I can sit there and say, okay, I am 100% confident that this team is going to win their conference tournament and get their automatic qualifier. I mean, unless you're talking about the really small conferences, all the big ones, it's anybody's game.
And how weird is it when you say, I'm going to pick two conferences, and you're talking college basketball and you don't mention the ACC?
Yep. Yeah, I was going to say the Blue Bloods of Duke and North Carolina are way down there. The fact that they aren't the top basketball conference anymore is, I'm not going to say shameful, but it is incredible how that tide has changed.
Yeah, and it'll probably swing back in that way at some point. But yeah, it's weird. You know, you talk about college basketball and you look at the polls and you start scrolling down and going, wait a minute, I don't see Duke. I don't see North Carolina. I don't see Kentucky. I don't see Georgetown. I don't see these teams that were the perennial powers for so many years. They're not there.
Yeah. I mean, Big East was one. I mean, it's not really a thing anymore, but you don't have those schools in there as well. It's incredible to see the parity that has kind of come about. And it's a good thing too, though, because you don't have, you know, the same teams every single year in a sense, and anybody can win. So it is good to see, but I mean, I'm a North Carolina fan. I really want to see them get in and go on a run, because they're my team. They're my team. I gotta see it.
You know, they'll make a run at some point. They're the Tar Heels. You know, they'll come out of nowhere. How many times have we seen that happen where it's like, oh, Carolina's a 9 seed, they're going to have a rough year. And it's like, wait a minute, they're in the Final Four? How did that happen?
Because they're North Carolina. That's how. All right. Let's jump over and talk a little bit about the big game coming up on Sunday. As I said before, we're not going to give our picks on the show tonight. We're going to wait and let them be revealed. Gateway City Sports, who we're partnering with going forward, is going to unveil those picks after our show. So you can head over to the Gateway City Sports media pages. We'll share it as well so that, you know, we can see what our picks are. But we're going to unveil those after the show. But let's talk a little bit about some of the stuff that goes around the Super Bowl. I mean, the things that people get together for, the food and the commercials, because those things only enhance what's going to be an absolutely phenomenal game. I think the game's going to be really, really good. It's either going to be a 6-3 game or it's going to be like a 27-24 game.
You know, it's funny. I'm shocked how many people nationally think Philadelphia is going to blow this thing out. I don't see it, but there are a lot of people that don't think that Kansas City is going to be able to hang with them, that Philadelphia is going to make it ugly early. I agree with you. I think it's going to be a good game. You know, I'm not sure exactly how it's going to flow, but I think it is going to be a really good game. I hope the commercials are good. You know, the last couple of years, the commercials have not been up to par, I don't think, as far as Super Bowl commercials go. And then I'm a little concerned about the halftime show. As much as I don't mind watching Rihanna anytime, her performances are not always the best. So we will see how that goes. And, you know, really the Super Bowl, do we really need bands like the Black Eyed Peas and Rihanna playing at the Super Bowl? I mean, I know women watch the game, and I'm not trying to be a male, but, you know, you think, and, you know, they've been begging for this for years. Metallica would be just the most unbelievable halftime show ever to get people fired up. You know, I mean, anybody that knows anything about football players and football teams and pregame stuff, you know, Master of Puppets or, you know, For Whom the Bell Tolls plays in just about every warm-up, every locker room before a game, just to get guys fired up. And that would be amazing at a halftime show. I hope Rihanna does really well. I'm just, you know, that would not have been my choice as a halftime performer.
Yeah, if you could get Metallica to play the Super Bowl, I think that would take you back to you know, to the 90s when those halftime performances were awesome. I mean, yeah, maybe they're a little cheesy now that you look back at them, but they were awesome at the time. I absolutely loved a bunch of those. So, yeah, I'm excited to see how that plays out. I'm just like you. I'm really hoping that the commercials are going to be good this year as well. And one of the things I was kind of wanting to go off of is off those commercials, your all-time favorite Super Bowl commercial, because I was sitting there going, okay, I've got one or two that I'm like, yeah, I really, really like those. And then I started looking at lists and I was like, wait a second, I like that one too, and that one too, and that one too, and that one too. Like, I've got a handful of them that I'm just like, okay, they're iconic or they're funny or they're just timely. I've got, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different commercials that are up there for like some of the tops that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, without really sitting down and looking at lists, it's like, okay, what pops to the top of my head? Budweiser used to have really good ones, you know, the What's Up in the 90s. The Frogs were always really good.
Those were two of them.
Yep. You know, and then one of my favorites that's not very old is the Eli OBJ doing the reenacting the Time of My Life dance from Dirty Dancing. That was a classic in the last few years. But yeah, the frogs and the What's Up were probably two that really stand out from, you know, and that was go back to the 90s.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, those are the first two that popped into my head were the Budweiser Frogs, Budweiser and What's Up. I was looking at some of the other ones I had on there as I was looking through the E-Trade Baby. I think that one was pretty funny. Yeah. I really like the E-Trade Baby. McDonald's, Larry and MJ.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that Classics. Was absolutely classic. A couple of the newer ones, you know, Snickers with Betty White. That was a fun one. I know it was a little weird, but I really liked the Rocket Mortgage commercial with Jason Momoa when he took off his muscles and he took off his hair and was bald. I thought that was pretty freaking hilarious. Not only because it was a funny commercial, but the fact that he played into it and was just like, hey, this is real me, that kind of thing. Right. But the one that just, and this is more so just because I'm a guy, and it is because I'm a guy, the Pepsi commercial with Cindy Crawford.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, how can you not think of a commercial and not think of that one with Cindy and just go, yeah, that was a good commercial to see as a young adolescent growing up.
Yeah, well, there are adolescents right now going, who's Cindy Crawford?
God, look her up because she still looks good.
And have you seen her daughter?
Spitting image.
Looks just like her. Yeah, exactly like her. It's crazy.
It is unbelievable how much she looks the same. But yeah, I mean, those are some of the good ones. I mean, there's definitely a lot more. But those definitely the ones that stuck out and made me laugh, I think, when I saw those. And I absolutely hope we get some good ones this year as well. Now you got to flip over to the food. Okay. The Super Bowl is like the winter Thanksgiving in a sense of the year, because you get so much great food. It's in my mind, it's a grazing kind of thing. You know, you want to have the finger foods, you want to have stuff that you can kind of just pile on a plate and eat and then go back and get some more later. There's a lot of different food items that go around football and around the Super Bowl in itself, but I was wondering what you generally gravitate to as far as what is on your game day platter for the Super Bowl.
Wings, of course. You can't go wrong with the classic buffalo wing. You know, usually, you know, parties that I'm at, there's usually wings, there's usually potato skins, there's the nacho stuff going around, you know, there's usually some kind of chili there, hot dogs, that kind of stuff. Just the typical, normal, you know, game day football type stuff, and then all kinds of desserts, and then, you know, usually the alcohol is flowing as well. You know, you can't have a Super Bowl party without having a little cocktail or two, but, you know, just the traditional stuff. Don't get too crazy.
I say for us, it's the little Smokies. Those are the ones that are always a big hit. Little Smokies. We've come recently into shrimp. Shrimp has been a big one. Yeah. Once again, just kind of a finger food that you can get into. This year, though, I think we're going to be celebrating my nephew's birthday on Super Bowl Sunday as well. So we're going to kind of change direction a little bit. I think we're actually going to have pizza this year because it's his birthday. So exactly his birthday, but we're celebrating his birthday. So we're getting pizza and stuff like that. So it's going to be a little bit of a different Super Bowl for sure. But yeah, you got to go with the finger foods. You got to go with the wings. All that stuff has to be a part of it to make it a good Super Bowl Sunday. I'm excited. I cannot wait. This is the first one I'm going to be able to watch in the last 3 or 4 years, because normally I've been in Chicago for a hockey tournament. So I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I'm glad you actually get to watch it. Best Super Bowl party I ever went to. My buddy lives right outside of Baltimore, and maybe I've told you this story. I jumped into my car the last time the Ravens were in the Super Bowl. Jumped into my car on a Friday, left St. Louis, drove the 17 hours to Maryland, got there Saturday afternoon. You know, we hung out Saturday night, watched the Super Bowl on Sunday, went to the Super Bowl parade on Monday. Got out of the parade Monday afternoon at like 4 o'clock, got in my car, had to drive straight back home because I had to be a 17 hour drive. I had to be at work in 19 hours.
Damn.
Drove all the way home. Like I drove through, and I left it dark. So I like left Maryland. It was sunny there. I got to like Pennsylvania. It was raining, got into the mountains. It was snowing. Like I was driving through Ohio in the middle of the night with my windows rolled down to stay awake, cold air and snow blowing in my window, tried to stay awake as I drove home, but I made it. But that was a fun Super Bowl, but a crazy couple days.
Yeah, I can imagine, but that's definitely a memory that's going to stick with you for a very, very long time.
Yeah, it was fun.
Oh, yeah, I don't think I've ever really had a true Super Bowl party experience. I mean, generally it's been, you know, we would hang out with my brother and his wife and the kids over at their house. The one time I went to a quote unquote Super Bowl party was the year the Rams played the Patriots. And it was when I was in high school, hung out with some friends from high school at one of their houses, and we watched the game and all left in disappointment.
Yeah, I was actually working at a restaurant that night and like was pacing, you know, was at the bar just pacing back and forth watching the end of that game. I was managing. That was a frustrating night for sure.
Well, that was the last, up until 2019 against, the Stanley Cup Finals, that was the last local championship that I actually got to watch, because 06 and 2011 with the Cardinals, I did not get a chance to watch the clinching games for either of those series because I was working.
Really?
Yeah. So I'll say this. I'm thankful for the Blues because they erased that painful memory of my last attempt at watching a local championship.
That's cool. At least you got to see that. I remember being at the Super Bowl parade when the Rams won in 99. And that was they did it the next day, and it was cold, and their flight was delayed, and there was snow on the ground, and there were a couple hundred thousand people in downtown St. Louis freezing their butts off, and it was almost dark by the time they actually got into town. But it was cool, to see those guys celebrating with the city. And it's a shame we didn't get to have a few more of those celebrations, because that team definitely should have had at least one more championship, if not two. But, some bad football memories in St. Louis, but also some really good ones as well.
Oh, yeah. Very, very true. Very true. All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap things up. I know you want to talk one thing about your work with Real Men Wear Pink. They've got an event coming up tomorrow, actually.
They do. And I've got a link on my page. I'm going to put the link with the QR code on our page here tonight. But there is a game with the Ambush tomorrow night. It's a joint venture with the American Cancer Society and the Real Men Wear Pink campaign. If you scan that QR code, it's a $25 ticket. $5 immediately goes from those $25 to the American Cancer Society to help with the battle against breast cancer. So please do that. And if you do that, you get automatically entered in a chance to wear an autograph, to win an autographed pink Ambush jersey signed by all the players. And there's a bunch of different things that go along with it. So if you're still looking for something to do tomorrow night, run out and see the Ambush and support the American Cancer Society and the Real Men Wear Pink campaign.
Yeah. I mean, if it's going to be cold tomorrow night, go somewhere where it's going to be warm and see a lot of exciting action, because the Ambush have been quietly very, very good the last couple of years. And, it's one of those things. I remember back in the heyday when they were playing downtown and going to Ambush games. It was an absolute event on the weekend. So, and you got to make sure we kind of make that happen again, because soccer in St. Louis is continuing to push forward and grow. And there's going to be a lot of great soccer action across the area over the next couple of years. So make sure you go out and support. And once again, for tomorrow night, it's helping a good cause. I mean, who hasn't been touched by cancer at some point in their life? And we got to do what we can to, find a cure.
Yeah. If you haven't been touched by cancer, you probably will be at some point in your life, whether it's a relative or a friend or yourself. So, if you can help, please do, because it is such a worthy cause and they do such amazing things, not just in the area, but around the country. So, please get out and help and support that in any way you can. One other real quick thing before we go, we were talking about St. Louis football history. I'm going to encourage you, and actually our friend over at Gateway Sports, Gene Bonds, shared this on his page today, but our buddy Tim McKernan on the Balloon Party today, his whole show, he was going back and played some audio of the history of St. Louis sports from the 80s through now, and what happened with the football Cardinals and some of the behind the scenes things that will upset you when you listen to it, of how we lost a football team with the Cardinals that should have never left St. Louis. And we kind of did it to ourselves. Our leaders in this area did it to ourselves. And then the things that went on with the Rams, and also how all of that cost us an NBA team as well. So, like I said, Gene shared that on Gateway Sports, to go check it out, or go check out, Tim's got it on his page as well, Balloon Party and timmckernan.com. So go check that out, because there's interviews with former mayors, Vince Schammel, and the former county executive, Gene McNary, that were involved in all of that and their recollection of everything that went down. So if you're interested in the history of St. Louis and what happened to two football teams and a potential NBA team, go check that out for sure.
Yeah, always great stuff from Tim McKernan. He dives deep into things that a lot of people try to shy away from, in a sense. And he gets down to the nitty gritty of it and really kind of exposes the actual truth and makes you go, oh man, yeah, maybe we're not as good as we thought we were.
Yeah, well, he's not afraid to upset people, you know, and doesn't really care what anybody thinks. He's going to let you know what happened or what he feels like happened, and you got to love Tim. He's been doing it for a long time now.
That he has. All right, you got anything else before we head out tonight?
I'm good, man. I just hope everybody has a safe Super Bowl weekend. You know, go out, have fun, but if you're drinking, make sure you don't drive. You know, have a designated driver, get an Uber, do whatever. Go out, party, have fun, but be safe. Don't throw away your life or somebody else's because you had too much fun and were too stubborn to do the right thing.
Oh, I cannot agree anymore on that statement whatsoever. Don't forget, check out Gateway City Sports for our official Super Bowl picks. We'll also be sharing those on our page once those are released. I think you're going to see some very, very similar picks for both of us going forward for this Super Bowl. And don't forget, we'll be back next week to recap what went down in the Super Bowl. We'll talk about the resumption of the NHL season, the NBA and NHL seasons, the NHL trade deadline coming up. We're going to be getting ready for spring training because the Cardinals will get that underway next week. Holy cow. Unbelievable for sure. So for Scott Tobin, I am Wags. Thank you guys for joining us tonight. Stay safe out there. Enjoy the Super Bowl. We'll see you guys next week.
Hey, it's you, man, here from Casey. For all your sports news, catch the Toasted Tavern with Scott Tobin and the man called Wags weeknights at 9 p.m. You can follow Toasted Tavern on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get toasted.